All right, class, this is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and welcome back for another episode of Bitcoin Kindergarten. We're at block height 685,091, and the current price of Bitcoin is $38,527 per Bitcoin. Jestifer, you want to introduce our guest tonight?
I'd be glad to. So this week we have Dylan BTCization. He's been putting out some fantastic macro content, so I'm really excited for his presentation this evening. Take it away.
Hey guys, my name is Dylan LeClaire, 20 years old, work for Bitcoin Magazine, started that gig up a few months ago. Basically cover financial markets and been doing a little bit of on-chain stuff as well. But yeah, just gonna cover the macro, like the bull case for Bitcoin tonight. Bitcoin is a ascending technology and money around our world, but the true bull case for why we need Bitcoin is revealed when you kind of come to understand how irreversibly broken the incumbent system is. So yeah, I guess we can walk through that tonight. I guess we can start off. You want me to just hop into it, Optimus?
Yeah, just hop in, and then just tell me when you need me to move the slides around, since I'm handling that right now.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I think what's displayed here is the Fed fund rate, which is essentially the interest rate that's set by the Federal Reserve. So the bull case for Bitcoin in terms of the incumbent monetary system or financial system is we're basically at the end of the long-term debt cycle. So most people have a pretty solid understanding of like the short-term debt cycle, as in the business cycle, or understanding that, you know, by chance maybe every 10 years there's a recession. But most people don't really know why. And the why is that everything is driven by credit. Credit meaning debt, and these cycles, these boom and these busts, while there is underlying, there is a productivity trend, what's actually driving it is the expansion and the contraction of credit. And so that a good way to kind of visualize that is through these interest rates, which are set by the central bank or by the Fed in this case. But it's really more that the market kind of forces their hand because of the underlying credit dynamics. So what you have is the long-term debt cycle is really a bunch of short-term debt cycles, which occur about every 7 to 10 years on top of each other or following each other. So see, interest rates peaked in 1981 at 20%, meaning the cost of capital, if you wanted to go get a mortgage or you wanted to go borrow some money, your cost of capital, and this is nominal, this isn't adjusted for inflation, but the cost of capital is 20%. And so for the last 40 years, what you've basically seen is debt loads in the United States have been accumulating. And following each productivity boom, debt loads accumulate and they become unserviceable. And in response to that, the government and the central bank cuts interest rates. They lower the cost of capital to kind of ease business conditions. So, and there's a bunch of things at play here, like not only that, but demographics, and you know, just a whole bunch of different things, technology growth and that. But the debt is really what's driving these rates and really I guess like the economy as a whole and credit. And debt is probably one of the least understood things about the economy, even though it's the most important. You want to hop to slide 3 real quick. The third slide. This is debt to GDP in the United States. So we went from like 150% debt to GDP in the 60s and 70s to today, we're at 400%. So this is a function of debt never really being able to reset or clear. Following each bust, each recession, decline in economic productivity, and that's caused by these credit contractions, instead of letting, you know, the malinvestment the malinvestment wipe out, get liquidated, what central bank's response was to cut rates, ease markets, and really intervene and not let everything reset. And so over the course of the last 40 years doing this over and over again, now what was what could have been a small recession would result in, if they didn't provide ever more easing, ever more stimulus, I guess you can think of it as, there will be a deflationary or depression or collapse, which would make the 1930s look like a joke. And so if you want to go to slide two, this is the total debt around the world. It's pushing $300 trillion. And over the last two decades, especially, what everybody has thought of as growth, whether you want to think of that as stock market prices, just GDP in general, real estate, that's just all a function of stimulus or easing. Debt loads just increasingly going up. We are in the everything bubble. And that includes Bitcoin. Bitcoin would not be trading at 38,000 if the cost of capital wasn't nominally at zero, and in real terms, meaning adjusted for inflation, the cost of capital around the world is negative. And so we're in this situation where the incumbent system can't escape this reality of debt loads being far too high to ever raise interest rates again, requiring ever more easing, ever more stimulus. So really, every single investor, every single capital allocator on the globe has to protect themselves against two realities, which is, to keep the system glued together, you need ever more stimulus, or, you know, in basic terms, ever more money printing. That's the one binary outcome. And the other is, if they stop, or even if they continue, the debt loads mean that there will be a collapse. And in that collapse of the financial system, because of the historically immensely high debt levels, there's immense counterparty risk, and anything with counterparty risk, you probably won't see, or that asset you think is there is not actually there. And so with Bitcoin, it actually solves for both at the same time. And so if you want to go to six for me, This is a chart, and while the backdrop is pretty different, this is a chart of, it's a pretty notorious chart in the Bitcoin space, and it is kind of a funny meme, maybe not funny, but of the Weimar Mark in Weimar, Germany, following the First World War. The Germans basically printed or destroyed the value of their currency, the paper mark, against what was previously pegged to gold. And so that's a log chart, and it still is parabolic. But if you look at just the chart, it looks like it went straight up. But actually, what you saw was immense volatility and wild swings in the price as this thing was, going to the moon. So if you want to go to number five, what we're seeing here with the monetization of Bitcoin is you have a trend of more and more hodlers and more people around the world who are adopting Bitcoin as their primary monetary asset, and actively accumulating and holding Bitcoin. But Bitcoin, the fact of the matter is, it is denominated in dollars. And so what you see in March, this is a chart of Bitcoin, and under it is the VIX, which is a volatility index of the financial system. And so what we see is the VIX spikes whenever there is a deleveraging, whenever there's a liquidity crisis in the financial system. So what we see is when the VIX is elevated at these certain points with the blue lines. Bitcoin also sells off in tandem, most notably on March 12th when the VIX hit levels that it hadn't seen since the Great Financial Crisis. And everything sold off, including Bitcoin selling off over 50% in a day. The reality is that Bitcoin is pure price signal. No one can manipulate the supply, and it is liquid globally 24/7, 365. So what to expect going forward, volatility won't go away in dollar terms. Bitcoin will continue to be pure price signal and be a check on central bankers, both on the upside and the downside, as the legacy system kind of cannibalizes itself with on the upside, ever more liquidity, ever more stimulus, and ever more just, I guess you want to say money printing. If you want to go to slide four, this is the global central bank, the major global central bank balance sheets. And so they're basically competitively printing against each other. And this is the game theory of fiat currencies. There's an incentive to have a weaker currency, and because it attracts, it makes your export market stronger, and it attracts capital inside your domestic borders. So the game theory of fiat is to basically race to the bottom. So we're seeing that today. And this is the whole game. It's, you have to, as an investor, as a saver, as a capital allocator, you have to protect yourself against this, against the great monetary inflation. But you also, when it unwinds, and these unwinds can be long and protracted, or they can be extremely quick, like we saw with last March, you need to have something that can protect yourself against both of these events, because that's the whole game. There is a bull or bear case for any asset, but really, that's more at a micro level. The macro level is that this thesis is the investment case for every single asset, and you want to have what can suit you best for both. And in my personal opinion, that is Bitcoin. We all know the attributes of Bitcoin as a monetary asset, and the self custody that's natively built into the network. That kind of is the summary. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to dive into those.
I got one for you, Dylan. In your opinion, is there anything that central banks can do to get out of this situation without just putting their foot on the gas pedal?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really interesting question, and I've thought about it a lot. Like, what would I do? I asked Greg Foss that question yesterday, actually. I said, like, what would you do in this position? And honestly, I mean, I like to make fun of, you know, central banks and call them dicks and whatever. Like, but ultimately, they have the toughest job in the world, or one of them. I mean, these people do benefit from the system, and a lot of them are, you know, boomers who, you know, maybe they're insidious, maybe they're not. So I kind of waffle back and forth, but they don't really have any choices or alternatives besides what they're doing. So in terms of like what their choices are, it's basically what they're doing now, which is print a lot and go on to CNBC and Bloomberg and wherever every single day. And they've been doing it basically, they've been doing their rounds for the last month a lot, which kind of tells you they're a little worried, but, you know, basically jawboning and saying, hey, inflation's not here, it's transitory, don't worry, guys, like, everything's okay, because they don't have any other alternative. If central banks, you know, if someone had the balls to say, hey, we need to address this problem, it's gone too far and we're just making it worse, and they stopped easing and they withdrew themselves from the markets, everything would collapse. Government would collapse. The banking system would go insolvent. There would be riots. Like, that's not an exaggeration at all. And so they have to do it. So, I mean, I guess if I was a central banker, and I don't know if this could be done with a nation state like the U.S. or a G7 nation, but if I was a smaller central bank, I'd be actively accumulating Bitcoin under the surface, in attempt to maybe peg my currency to it later on. or you know, buying Bitcoin as strategic reserves. But yeah, I mean, that's the whole game. And I mean, this, like, everything's going to go up over the course of the next decade. Because, so, like, just for some context, this is nothing new, and there's been these huge debt cycles in the past. But in all those cases, there was a peg to gold, or there was so when there was these huge credit contractions and there's huge deflationary collapses, there was something to fall back to. There was something to I guess, like, collapse onto. And so in the 1930s, for example, there was the Roaring Twenties. There was an absolute mania of leverage and margin trading and investing in assets with debt. But when that bubble popped, when this huge bubble actually burst, there was a gold peg. So, you know, all the paper claims, there was bank runs and, you know, all of the like, it collapsed onto gold. There was that mad scramble down to the base layer, which was gold. And whether you had the gold or not, that was what they came down to. And ultimately, to devalue out of that debt bubble, they confiscated everybody's gold and revalued against it higher, which lowered the debt burden in real terms. There is no gold peg today. So everything, like fiat money is created through debt. So if I lend you $100 plus interest, I now have a $100 asset, and whoever I lent it to has a $100 plus interest liability. $100 was created in that scenario. That's how the monetary system works. Every dollar in circulation was created through lending. And when dollars are defaulted on, or loans are paid back, or when loans are defaulted on or paid back, it actually destroys dollars. And so the system is dependent on ever increasing credit expansion just to survive. It is a mathematical inevitability that there will be more dollars next year. And if there's not, then the system is collapsing. And so just from a fundamental level, Bitcoin is mathematically guaranteed to go up in dollar terms, besides, you know, blips on the radar where the system is unraveling, which is why they need to step in, which is, so, like, it is of my opinion that we'll see something similar to what happened last March, at a much bigger level. I don't know if it's this year, next year, the year after, 5 years down the road. But none of the problems have been addressed. They have been addressed. They've been made much worse. The problems that we encountered in 08, 09, the problems we encountered last March, nothing's been fixed. It's actually just been made worse, and the can's been kicked down the road farther. So the bull case for Bitcoin is that it is an inevitability that they will have to continue to print. And if they don't, then everything collapses and Bitcoin's the only thing that survives anyway. And Bitcoin keeps on ticking. There's a difficulty adjustment and the proof of work algorithm. Bitcoin has an unforgeable costliness to it that fiat money or nothing, no other asset has. So, yeah.
Okay.
I got a question for you, Dylan.
I'll go just for...
Oh, sorry.
No, you can go.
It's on that, on the Weimar Germany, chart. Yeah. Okay. So this is showing, I guess it's a two-parter. What do we know of what the debt to GDP ratio was for Weimar Germany? And the second part is we're watching the, you know, percentage change in gold price. Would you expect that to happen with other commodities as well in that situation?
Yeah. So I don't have with me the data on the debt levels. What is different is that in the Weimar hyperinflation, it is different. And so, you know, it might not be the best comparison in terms of the two scenarios, because in Weimar's case, they had debt that wasn't denominated in their currency. So what they did was they printed their own currency to buy another currency. So they printed the currency, which devalued. They bought another currency pair, which devalued it further to pay off the debt. And they were basically the only bid on that pair. So it's like, you know, it's like, just for example, like if the Fed was like just printed money to buy Bitcoin, what would it do? Well, it would probably look like that chart. And so in terms of other commodities, or actually wait, so that's the Weimar case. They had debt that wasn't in their own currency, and that's kind of the base scenario for every inflationary debt crisis, is when you have, especially like third world countries, like a lot of Latin American countries and whatnot, they have a lot of, if you have foreign debt, dollar denominated debt, and there's a U.S. recession, well, those cash flows stop coming in, and that's when you see, like, you know, Turkey or these currencies that collapse against the dollar overnight. It's because of kind of what we're seeing in this chart. In the U.S.'s case, we are the world reserve currency, so we are actually we are a debtor nation. We are basically in debt to the world, and we have to supply dollars in the form of debt to the entire world. We are a twin deficit nation, meaning our trade balance is negative, meaning we basically, our biggest export is dollars, and we also run a deficit in our own nation. And so that the world is kind of waking up to this, and for the first time ever, actually, foreign central banks and governments are net sellers of U.S. treasuries for the first time in, I believe, 40 years, in 2021 or 2020. So that's changing. The world's kind of waking up to the fact that they don't want our paper for their goods. And to address the commodity question, I think most things, just assets, commodities, goods and services in general, will rise and fall with the expansion and contraction of credit in the 2020s. But I think Bitcoin being a monetary asset, and in this case, gold being a monetary asset, being the hardest thing to relatively produce compared to everything else, will reflect the price signal most purely.
Wow, thank you. Scary.
Yeah, Dylan, for someone listening to this that isn't into Bitcoin yet, like, what panic level should they be? How big of an emergency is this for someone that is just falling down this rabbit hole and needs to protect themselves?
Yeah. So, I mean, panic level. Well, it depends your position. If you are sitting on a pension or a portfolio of bonds and a bunch of dollar denominated assets, I mean, the panic level, if you're sitting on a bond portfolio, should be pretty high, because basically on the path or transition to hyper Bitcoinization, all the creditors, meaning everybody that is lending their money out for a 1-3% nominal return, fixed income return, they're gonna get their purchasing power wiped out. And that's just a mathematical inevitability. So that, I would say, yeah, fixed income and, you know, I guess like boomer contillionaires are gonna be in for a rude awakening in terms of like people that are young, Gen Z, millennials, Gen X, even boomers. The best thing you can do today is just to start stacking. Any value you do provide, Bitcoin should be, you know, for anything longer than, I would say, a few months out, Bitcoin should be your unit of account for long-term economic calculation. I mean, everybody has different situations and different liabilities and needs, but anything longer than 3 to 6 months should be saved for the long term in Bitcoin, because short-term volatility aside, it is, again, a mathematical inevitability that Bitcoin will continue to go up in dollar terms.
Yo. Take it away, Winekiss.
This might be like a too loaded of a question, but if you can predict like the next, what's 10 years from now in like a best, moderate, or worst case scenario, like maybe all three, what do you think like will happen for, and not just for Bitcoiners, just like your average person that probably won't be stacking?
Yeah. So are you like, are you asking like best case, meaning like
just for the world, I guess. I don't know. Or like how.
Yeah.
Like, will this case, for instance, like, will this just lead to hyperinflation where all fiat currency is worth zero, like something like that, you know?
Yeah, I think there is a tail risk with the path we're on, that this thing happens and it unravels too fast. and you know, while we would all be in a good place, it probably wouldn't be the most pleasant world to live in for the, you know, intermediate term, especially, you know, if you're living in a city. I guess the reality is, for the last, like, on a fiat standard, the world's kind of had, it's kind of had like a curtain over its eyes in terms of like capitalism has been warped or distorted, and a lot of things that wouldn't be profitable, or a lot of jobs or industries that wouldn't be able to survive otherwise, have been kind of subsidized. And so, in the light of Bitcoin, and true economic opportunity cost up against a world of, free money, zombie corporations, bloated governments, I do think the unwind, honestly, even my base case is that it is a little ugly. And it's more of just like a self-correcting, you know, like Darwinian, you know, reality where like Bitcoin is just a reversion to the mean. And we've strayed so far away that, you know, the correction back is kind of ugly. So I guess my worst case, for the world is that, you know, central banks continue to go nuts. And just with how fiat money works and how Bitcoin works, you're going to see a lot of people, and I applaud him for it, like Michael Saylor, where they say, hey, like, the cost of capital for me is zero. The inflation rate, CPI aside, which is kind of bogus, consumer price index, which is how the government measures inflation, is saying inflation's 2 or 3%. I measure inflation with, and this is Michael Saylor, I measure inflation with expansion of the monetary base. Inflation for me is 20%, 15%, whatever it is year over year. I'm going to borrow at 0%. I'm going to borrow for 7 to 10 years, hell, even 20 years. Like Apple is buying, has bonds. They're acquiring debt for 20 years, 25-year duration for nothing even, like 1 to 2%. And I'm going to stack as much Bitcoin as I can because I have a negative cost of capital and I'm acquiring the hardest money ever. And I think in that scenario, like just going back to what we covered before, where lending and borrowing creates money, you could have opportunistic people like are already doing this. I mean, like I'm doing this at a micro scale where like I'm actively over the last couple of years, instead of paying off some of the debt that I would otherwise pay off, I'm stacking Bitcoin and leaving some liabilities on my balance sheet because I know that whatever interest rate I'm paying, the assets, the Bitcoin that I acquire is going to outpace it in dollar terms. And so you're going to have people, not just, you know, a 20-year-old that has a pretty standard job, but you're going to have megacorps, hedge funds, commercial banks, nation states do this. And I think it could, have the potential to really unwind fast. And you know, and the best case scenario is that the next decade, and I don't really see this as too probable, but governments kind of, you know, tighten up their bootstraps, stop spending out of their ass. You know, Bitcoin exists. I don't know, like what the price is at, but you know, the price of Bitcoin is only seven figures in 2030, and you know, there's democracy is still intact. I mean, that sounds kind of like anarchist, but yeah, the reality is like Bitcoin is this radical new technology that will disintermediate kind of like traditional nation states as we see it, and like, I mean, that is part of the whole like macro case, but it's not really part of like the financial pitch, you know, like democracy dissolving and collapsing upon itself. But I think that that is a reality that we may see here over the next decade or two.
That actually fits in perfectly with one of the questions that we got in the chat. Z-Fusion asked, so if printing stops, then total world anarchy?
Yeah, so basically, if printing stops, then everything goes to zero. And that, like, that sounds, you know, kind of exaggerated, but the reality of the credit system is that every dollar is created and destroyed through lending. And in these, so like, if they didn't intervene in March, if they didn't come in with quantitative easing programs and inject $1 trillion of stimulus and start buying corporate debt and start monetizing the federal deficit, meaning the Fed is, for every dollar Congress issues, the Fed is going into the bond market and buying up a dollar of federal debt. And clearly they're not buying it off of them because they're not allowed. So they do it in the open market. It's like kind of a loophole. But if the Fed's not doing that and Congress isn't doing that, then everything unwinds down to zero. Meaning like there's no buyers, there's no liquidity, and equities crash, bonds crash, there's no bid. The government is insolvent and defaults on its debt, and everybody, the banking system fails, because with the way fractional reserve banking works, there's about, they have $100 of deposits, and they lend that out so many times over that they're levered, you know, 20x, 25x, meaning they have $4 of equity, they have $4 of equity cushion for every $100 of deposits that they actually have. And so everybody, really, the system where we are today, the system really is insolvent, essentially. And so if they stop printing, which is against all basic incentives, political incentives, I mean, like the AOCs of the world, Bernie, even Trump, like kind of like the rise of populism everywhere around the world. And this is a symptom of fiat. It's basic political incentives. If you don't print, you're gonna be in a guillotine pretty soon. And so, yeah, I mean there is a probability, and I don't know what that is, that there's someone with big balls that comes up and, you know, maybe tapers or stops printing at a rate that they are today. In that case, Bitcoin gets hit, but the thing is that Bitcoin doesn't really get hit in real terms. It's just in dollar terms, because like the bear case for Bitcoin is that they stop printing, but that's the bear case for everything on the planet. And so Bitcoin still has an immutable monetary policy. It still has a supply and inelasticity, and it still has a proof of work algorithm with, you know, hundreds of thousands of ASICs around the world with a difficulty adjustment, making it, you know, incrementally like harder and harder and harder as time goes on to acquire, you know, a new unit of this asset. And so Bitcoin in any scenario is still going to protect your wealth, but in dollar terms, it very well could be, you know, it could chop in half. It, like, Bitcoin could, if they stopped printing today, Bitcoin would get murdered, but so would the Dow Jones, so would real estate, so would everything.
I had a question. Dylan, in your opinion, would you consider that the money printing and all the quantitative easing and all the BS that they kind of make up to continue the printing, would you consider that a leading force in the Bitcoin adoption? Or, I guess, how do you kind of see that play out?
Yeah, I would say, so my opinion is that Bitcoin adoption would happen regardless, just because it is a superior monetary system. It's a system of rules and not rulers, and people naturally, you know, just the game theoretic, like, shelling point of Bitcoin, you know, for Bitcoin to not be adopted would mean that there would have to be something superior to it. So if the system was marginally a lot, you know, a lot better, it would still be less good compared to Bitcoin. It would still be inferior to Bitcoin. And so I am of the opinion that Bitcoin would win regardless, and maybe it just takes a long time, because, you know, if there's a balanced budget, I mean, hell, their currency competition, if the dollar, or maybe not the dollar because of the world reserve currency, we kind of have to print. But if, you know, there was another currency out there that they were very fiscally responsible and, you know, had high rates, like the way to compete with Bitcoin is raise the cost of capital. But with debt to GDP being 400 to 500%, they can't do that. So I do think 110%, the quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, that's driving people in hordes to Bitcoin. It's part of the reason, like, why I'm here is, as I kind of put it together and realized, like, I was dipping my toe in the water, but I didn't realize that there was no alternative until last March, last April. Like Michael Saylor, all of these institutional investors, they're coming in because they kind of reached these same conclusions. And I mean, it's in the Genesis block, right? Like, that's the value prop of Bitcoin, is that, you know, it's something that can't be manipulated. So I definitely think it's driving the adoption, but I don't think it is. Bitcoin would not be relevant, or that it wouldn't be adopted if it wasn't as bad of a situation as we're in now.
Hell yeah, right on. Appreciate it, brother.
Yeah, man.
Ooh. I got another question.
Shoot it, Angus.
I'm going to assume that at the market cap we're at under $1 trillion, there's probably no central banks participating yet, or if it is, it's at a very small scale. At what point do you think we get to that point where they'll be participating, and why do you think that hasn't occurred yet, given that, like, pretty much all of us have figured it out? Is it just
I think at a small scale it's happening, and we just, you know, that there's no incentive to kind of announce it. So maybe not the Fed or the ECB or the Bank of Japan or the major central banks, like I had on that chart. But I think there's a very strong probability, actually, that you have smaller central banks, maybe of jurisdictions which are kind of hostile with the U.S. or, you know, like Iran or maybe North Korea or... I know I heard that the Iran central bank, and this may be wrong, it might have been another country in that region, but that they were working with, or they mandated that the miners in their country sell their Bitcoin directly to the central bank, because of domestic imports and exports, and the fact that the SWIFT system, which is like the dollar system for around the world, the SWIFT network, they were kind of cut off from that, or that they have been sanctioned in the past. So Bitcoin being this permissionless money, not only a store of value, but also just being able to work around capital controls. Also, I did a little bit of digging around, and I have the Swiss central bank, the SMB, they actually have a history of, I think, over the last 20 years, I'm not exactly sure, have in order to weaken their currency marginally because of this incentive with fiat, which is to competitively devalue to make your domestic, your exports more attractive and your domestic economy more attractive from a capital flow standpoint. The Swiss National Bank has printed francs, bought dollars, and bought dollar denominated assets with those dollars. So the Swiss National Bank actually holds Tesla, Apple, Amazon, a bunch of stocks. And funny enough, and they owned this before the Bitcoin decision, but the Swiss National Bank holds a bunch of gold, but they have $11 million of MicroStrategy stock. So indirectly, and they do this just to have a strong balance sheet. I mean, it's like if you could print money out of thin air and buy assets, you know, you'd be pretty quite a good investor. So, I mean, that there's definitely these talks. And the other week they said the cryptocurrency market isn't liquid enough for us to enter, but they have hundreds of stocks with just a few million dollars worth. So these conversations are definitely being had, I think. I think Ross Stevens said the other day that he was contacting you know, the heads of major central banks, and I don't know if they, you know, picked up the phone, but these guys are definitely aware of the position they're in. Like everything that I just said, they won't say it in public, but they know. And they have to put on a brave face and go out there and say everything's fine, but it's not. And I think more and more people are coming to understand the reality of Bitcoin, and that a lot of these people have egos and have, you know, maybe are just blatantly ignorant academics who think that their opinions and theories and whatnot actually matter in the real world. But more and more people are coming to understand that, like, Bitcoin is bigger than any one person, anyone's opinion, and that just the kind of the economic reality is too much to overcome. So I would suspect minor central banks are accumulating or maybe have small positions today, central banks, wealth, sovereign wealth funds, nation states. But I think the end game is major central banks printing dollars in the trillions, printing, you know, dollars, euros, whatever it is, in the trillions to acquire Bitcoin. And that's when it's, you know, too late for the average pleb.
Do you think that it's safe to assume that if we're going to see hyperinflation hitting, you know, the global markets, that with introduction of CBDCs, they can be actually pegged at a different rate? So let's say one new CBDC coin can be equal to $100, and in this way, essentially, banks can, like, fight the inflation by erasing some zeros.
I don't think CBDCs compete with Bitcoin, or they can like really escape the reality of how dire the current situation is. I mean, if so, with a CBDC, they can have all these different features and whatnot, and programmability and maybe, you know, expiration on money and all this really Orwellian things. But at the most basic level with money or currency competition, it's just supply and demand. And so if a CBDC comes in and is introduced, unless relatively interest rates or the cost of capital or the supply issuance or however you want to think about it is superior to Bitcoin or at the very least competitive, then it's just the same thing. It's just fiat with a you know, digital bow and an authoritarian stamp on it. Nothing new. It's honestly, CBDCs are really a great advertisement for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously, you know, Bitcoin is the best money out there. It's no questions about that. I'm just wondering, you know, if it is reasonable that if hyperinflation is super insane and like, I'm just, you know, wondering if it's possible that there might be actually a floating rate between dollars and then this new CBDC dollar. So in this way, the government can actually kind of slow down inflation rate, maybe like buying back dollars and kind of, you know, kind of burning them and then issuing new dollar, which is like with less zeros, essentially. I mean, it's definitely centralized garbage, but I'm just wondering if this can be one of the tools the government can implement.
Maybe. I think in failed currency regimes before, they've tried to, you know, introduce new currencies or you know, a new denominator with less zeros or whatnot following hyperinflationary events. I think ultimately, the biggest thing with currencies and hyperinflationary events is that it's more of a loss of trust than anything. And then once the trust breaks, then it's all over. And so that loss of trust is coupled with a perceived gain of trust or acceptance by the mainstream of Bitcoin. And so any CBDC, I kind of think of it as any CBDC that comes in and wants to compete with a dollar or... I'm not sure how that transition goes, whether it's a global CBDC or, you know, a national one or what, but any CBDC that comes in has to compete against the infrastructure and the perceived trust and network of Bitcoin that's been developing for 12 years, 15 years, whatever it is, And I just don't see that trust taking hold in a new CBDC. So, I mean, the Davos crowd, the people with the most to lose from the rise of Bitcoin, is my expectation that they won't go down without a fight. But I don't really see how they compete or do anything to stop it besides just kicking and screaming about energy use and Bitcoin for terrorists and a bunch of other stupid narratives. But I don't know. That's just my opinion. Sorry?
They're just going to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah. They're going to buy Bitcoin under the surface and then, you know, say it's boiling the oceans.
Classic playbook. Go, Tony. I cut you off. Yeah.
No. I was just saying that. Yeah, I agree completely. Thank you, Dylan. Yeah, for answering questions.
Yeah, man. I don't think I answered it too well, but I don't know. I'm not really too confident that they get one rolled out. To be honest, I think that places a little bit too much confidence in the governments. But I mean, you know, if they do, all the power to them. Let's see whatever they come up with.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if they start throwing like helicopter money, you know, if you have to sell this app and then they helicopter you this new CBDC, then they will onboard a big amount. Let's say like, you know, Fed just airdrops a new CBDC to the population and that's it, you know, that's like game over. People are going to use it and then they can, you know, peg it to dollar at a different rates, essentially like fighting inflation, kind of. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, I'm not sure. I think they'll have some, you know, advanced digital form of food stamps or something. But, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Any last question for Dylan?
I got one. I just wanted to thank you for putting up that Weimar chart with the volatility overlaid because I'd never seen it. And my ancestors lived it, and I just want your thoughts. I don't know enough about the details of the topic, but maybe there's some sort of correlation to the volatility today with leverage and back then in Weimar, or if there isn't, just talk about leverage maybe and your opinions on that and when and if ever to take it, or you know what you're doing or what you plan to do. And
yeah, so I will say that I posted that. Did I just come unconnected? Can you guys hear me?
No, you're still here. You're still here.
One sec. Hold up, guys. Phone disconnected.
I can hear you, Dylan.
Sorry, I'm back.
Yeah, dude. Can you hear us?
Right back like you never left.
Dylan, everyone says we can hear you. If you can hear us, you're back in.
Okay, I'm good. I was hearing static. All right. Yeah, sorry. I posted that chart because I think like people were freaking out about the Bitcoin volatility, especially the newbies. And I will admit that I'm not the most well versed on Weimar and the monetary history there. I bought the book When Money Dies. I haven't dug into it yet. But I think it just more speaks to when you have a monetary system kind of built on lies and political decree. Which in the case of Weimar was the paper mark, in the case of today is the dollar and every other fiat, versus just pure economic reality and proof of work, which is gold back in the day and Bitcoin today. And the volatility of Bitcoin today, there is that the adoption process and just the kind of wild price discovery that's associated with it, which is you know, a factor in its volatility. But I do suspect that over the next decade the volatility of Bitcoin, and I tweeted about it a little bit, the volatility of Bitcoin will speak more about the instability of the dollar and the legacy financial system than it will about Bitcoin itself, because of the debt situation and because of you know, just this kind of whipsaw of deflationary deleveraging and reflationary efforts by politicians and the central bankers. And so how I think about leverage is, it's a tool, but like any tool, you overabuse it and you can kind of get yourself hurt. And so I think leverage is great, depending on situation. So, for example, I've personally taken on unsecured debt, to live, my lifestyle, covered, necessities, and whatnot, over the last year plus, especially following the flash crash last year to 4K, I dumped 110% of my paycheck for months into Bitcoin and covered my daily expenses with, dollar loans, just kind of making a calculation in my head about, opportunity costs, and especially, depending on your credit rating and whatnot, you know, being able to secure dollar liquidity at 2%, 3%, 5%, even 10%, which sounds like a lot, rates, that can be attractive. I think I would do it, and there's a bunch of new things being built with Bitcoin as collateral, collateralized loans, the models of like Unchained and whatnot, where they don't rehypothecate, something like that would be very attractive. Where if Bitcoin goes to 20,000 tomorrow, and the legacy system pukes, I would very seriously think about putting down 5% of my stack, collateralizing it, and you know, going and buying more Bitcoin with the proceeds. Unsecured debt is honestly preferred. The perpetual swaps, leverage casino on Binance, FTX, etc. is, if you play it right, you can, you know, make it rich, but you can also lose everything. And with Bitcoin and the volatility that's present in this, even 2x leverage is kind of insanity if it's secured, meaning, you know, if there's a 50% drawdown. What we saw over last month, you lose your position. And so leverage is good, but preferably it's unsecured, meaning, you know, it's a bank loan, you stack some Bitcoin, you throw it in cold storage, and the worst case is you default or you get a bad credit score. Like, ultimately, I mean, this is not financial advice, but, you know, I am of the opinion that credit scores matter much less on where we are going. So yeah, that's kind of my thoughts. I think the next decade will be wildly volatile in dollar terms. And these, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we're at 400K and the legacy system pukes and we're at 200K a few days later. And at that point, stocks, real estate, everything gets hit. The government has to print its way back out. And so that Bitcoin is just going to be kind of this pricing mechanism for kind of the death of the legacy system.
Dude, thank you so much for answering that in full. And I also just bought that book, so I guess we're on that journey together, brother. But
nice.
You spoke about leverage, and you spoke about when you take it. You take it when the price is low, untethered to your Bitcoin if possible. But I know that the temptation is when you're that the fiat terms of your Bitcoin inflate, it's tempting to put it into Unchained, right? And take some fiat out at the top, not at the bottom, and then double down, right? And I feel like your method is much more conservative and calculated, obviously. And I feel like some of this stuff is emotional, and that's why we see these huge deleveragings, right? I mean, you know, there should be, yeah, maybe there need more education around when to take the debt. I mean, I think that's like something that's very difficult to calculate, right? Because you took a very calculated bet, which, you know, I commend you for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and I've And I, you know, like a couple years back, right near kind of the start of my rabbit hole journey, like, you know, tried out the derivative casino, just thinking that I was smart and just with a small amount. I mean, you know, and like you can slide a slider and go 10x leverage, 50x leverage. Not that I did that, but you know, the price moves 1% and you can double up or lose everything. And like, that's obviously hyperbole, compared to what you would actually try to do. But, yeah, I mean, at 64K a month ago, you feel like a genius. You want to go take out a loan for $1 billion to buy. But, honestly, the best time to do it is when, you know, you're petrified and everybody's texting you and wondering what the hell, why is the price down 70% from when they bought? That's probably the best time to go get any loan you can get your hands on and stack.
True.
Fuck yeah.
All right, Dylan. Well, you scared everyone listening. You've made us all realize the iffy nature of our financial system. But leave everyone with a bullish speculation. In 10 years, what is the Bitcoin price, considering everything you know?
I think in real terms, meaning in today's dollar prices, the Bitcoin price is at $3 to $6 million. In nominal terms, it's over $10 million. Meaning, and you know, probably, I don't know. It could be. I think a real purchasing power is probably 3 to 5 million. In 2030, in actual dollar terms, hell, I mean, freaking 50. Like I don't know. It just depends how bad everything unravels.
That's per sat, right?
Yeah. Basically.
Awesome. All right, Dylan. Well, let the people know where they can find you and what you're up to, and then we'll wrap this one up.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. BTCization. My name's Dylan LeClaire. I work for Bitcoin Magazine. I'm doing some stuff there. Releasing a new kind of product at the conference. Kind of a deeper dive thing. So that I'm excited for that. But yeah, I mean, just hit me up on Twitter. I'm hanging out there for the most part. So yeah, I appreciate, you know, coming on. It was fun to riff with you guys.
Awesome, dude. Yeah, thanks for coming on. And also, dude, you know, like, it's awesome seeing you do what you're doing now, considering you were one of us a little while ago. You know, you were part of the Bitcoin.
Still one of y'all.
Always and forever. But it's awesome to see you start to blow up, and you know, just the first, like, people can go back and listen to the first Bitcoin Kindergartens, and you were saying the same stuff back then, and kind of prophetic, not gonna lie. I'll have to look back on what you said, but if I remember correctly, you've basically been calling what's been happening for a while. So dude, props to you, and continue killing it, dude.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, peace out, guys. We will see you in Teacher's Lounge.